What took you so long, old man?
A shielder. I didn't know better. I'd say this was a robbery.
The most wanted in the land.
Now is not the time to be showing off.
I don't need your help, Doctor. You need mine. Just this once, you can't run off like you usually do.
Could it be we are looking for the same prize?
The eyes of Hades.
You got your dad as a sidekick.
I'm no one's sidekick.
There is an intruder on the premises.
What are you doing?
It's kill or be killed.
What happened to you?
You did, Doctor.
A shield!
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this episode by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Lee, how are you?
As fine as can be expected. So, and I expect a lot. It's good.
It's good.
We're missing Mr. Brown right now, but we're told that he will join us by and by. And
yes, indeed. You know, I've read his diaries. You know, I know he's got like all these volumes of. Let's just hope it's not 800 years before we see him again.
800 years.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Mm. But while we're waiting on Clarence to arrive, I want to go ahead and give a shout out to our friend Wynn Grace, who is in the chat. He is a faithful listener, also chimes in to Discussing Trek. So if you are on YouTube, look up Wynn Grace's channel and give his channel a like and a subscribe. He would definitely appreciate it. So I have a question for you, Mr. Shackelford, before we move on. Tomorrow, March the 6th, you wonder anything that might be significant about March the 6th?
March the 6th, huh? You got me. Is it an anniversary?
It is indeed an anniversary. It is the anniversary. So let me just read something out to you. The synopsis for this anniversary says, in this episode, we talk about the long hiatus and new showrunner for the BBC science fiction hit Doctor Who, with Stephen Moffat out as of the next series and Chris Chibnall coming in. What can we expect? Join us as we begin our first episode, hosted by Clarence Brown, Lee Shackelford, and Kyle Jones, Discussing Who, Episode 1, March the 6th, 2016, 8 years ago tomorrow.
How about that? And we were talking about Chibnall?
And we were talking about Chibnall, and believe it or not, we were all excited about Chibnall coming in as the new showrunner because we loved Broadchurch. Broadchurch was awesome, and we couldn't wait. Doctor Who was in good hand.
Yeah, that's right.
8 years ago. My, how time flies.
Yeah, that just seems wrong. It seems like we would have been talking about Stephen Moffat about 8 years ago, but...
Well, we were, but when we started was in the year that we had the final series coming up for Moffat, series 10, but there was a delay between final series because there was that year that he was doing Sherlock. So that's why we had the long hiatus between series 9, which we're reviewing, and the other.
And then the pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there we are.
Just somewhat related. For the sake of the camera, I'll hold up a prop. This is, it's all backlit because it's shiny. But this is the Blu-ray of the Sherlock Holmes film discovered a few years ago, Believed Lost. This was made in 1917.
Ooh.
And it stars William Gillette, who was the first actor to ever play Sherlock Holmes. He played him on the stage for years and years and years, and then he made this movie. And it is a film of that play that he... and so it is a remarkable find. It has been believed lost for decades and decades. And they did a beautiful... restoration of it. And I finally got the Blu-ray. As a Sherlockian, I blush to admit that it's taken me this long to get this. But imagine my delight to watch the thank yous at the beginning of the film as it's playing to the people who bankrolled this restoration. Very expensive. And of course, two of the names, you know, heading the list are Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. So bless those guys.
Blessed indeed. And
since you were talking about
it. Speaking of Stephen Moffat, you know, there are rumors that Stephen Moffat keeps hinting by denying, I believe, that he is possibly writing an episode of season next of Doctor Who.
And we may have an idea who he's writing about.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So you shared something, Lee, with us. So any spoilers about who he might be writing about?
Spoilers? Yeah. Unless she's playing a different character, we just know that Alex Kingston has let it be known that she's going to be in an upcoming Doctor. So we presume as River Song.
Well, we would hopefully presume as River Song. And, I would take her as Melody Pond.
Well, that's right. That's okay.
That would be all right then.
Anyway, those are all speculations. But the fact is, Clarence Brown is in the building.
Indeed. Clarence Brown, how are you? And we can't hear him.
I think he's not talking.
He's not talking.
He's not hearing us.
I think he can hear us. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens when you broadcast live.
That's true. Up on the tightrope, on the highway. Okay. In the chat, he says, I can hear you. He's mic checking. So anyway, yeah. So those of you who are watching this video stream, you can see him. But
oh, I really like what Wingray said in the chat. Mm-hmm. He says that this should be really interesting, with a new dynamic, the healed Doctor and River.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I would just be happy to see any Doctor in River, to be honest with you.
But it's true. Yeah. 15 is... There's Clarence.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back. I thought you were out sulking because this episode basically doesn't have Jenna Coleman in it.
You know, as the episode went further and further and there was no Jenna Coleman, I began to get sadder and sadder. But more sad. No. Those are the breaks.
I just thought you were going to wait and come in at the very end and be like, hey, I'm doing like Clara.
Right. Here's my,
that would have been perfect, actually.
This is my Clara impression.
Well, I am waiting, since I already made, you know, our memory announcement of our memory lane, I'll wait to say the last thing I wanted to say about that, which is, since tomorrow is March the 6th, 2016, 8 years discussing Who, gentlemen, thank you for 8 years. I'm looking forward to 80 more or 800 or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Clarence.
80 me can do it.
Yeah. Indeed. So Clarence, quick question. If we have someone listening for the very first time and they'd like to subscribe, how would you suggest they do that?
Well, first, let me say that you can support the show by subscribing. We'd love if you do that. You can also support the show by leaving a review and telling a friend. If you have a review idea, please send that in along with anything else you want us to know to discussingwho@gmail.com or at discussingwho on any and all social medias.
Indeed, indeed. And Clarence, how are you, by the way?
I'm doing great, man. No complaints. Living a life in this warm 80 degree Texas weather.
What? What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I mean, it's still 65 here, but it was up in the 70s in Mississippi today. But Lee, question for you.
Mm-hmm.
We have someone listening for the very first time. What do you like telling people?
Welcome aboard. And we are deeply grateful you spending this time here because we know you got other things you could be doing. And but you chose to spend this time with us. Thank you very, very much.
Awesome. Awesome. So, gentlemen, I say without further speculation, without further waiting, without further any whatevers, I say let's go ahead and get started. And by doing that, I need to say, if you have not seen The Woman Who Lived, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward...
Spoilers!
Spoilers!
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky, too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review The Woman Who Lived. This episode is the sixth episode of the 2015 series of Doctor Who, first airing on the 24th of October, 2015. It starred Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor and Jenna Coleman as Clara Oswald. This is part two of a two-part story. So summary view, Clarence, I'll start with you. Summary view, what say you?
Man, it's so funny getting to episodes that we've never reviewed before all these years in. And for this one in particular, I do not remember anything about it. I think I kind of put it out of my head because there are no Jenna Coleman in it, which is you know, par for the course in my book. But yeah, this episode, I think it was interesting. I'm not going to say I loved it, but I do think it was interesting. I know before you were mentioning that our last episode, this was a two-parter. To me, they could have took this episode and put it anywhere, and it still kind of would have worked with the continuity we had with me. So, yeah, it didn't really feel like a two-parter to me, but I could see what you were, where you're going with that. So I think I enjoyed it. There were some great parts, but yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to frame my exact feelings about it. So maybe you guys could talk me up.
All right. Lee, what say you?
Kind of the same as Clarence. I really enjoyed it, but yeah, it did sort of, I was thinking, I think I would have enjoyed this more in season 10 or something, you know, it's like, oh, it's her again. Well, she is immortal, you know? Yeah, to me, it's an interesting story about what it is to be the Doctor. And I find that very interesting. This is him talking frankly about why he hangs out with human companions. And so even though you're not expecting the episode to be about that, that very quickly turns into what it is. Written by Catherine Tregenna, a Welsh playwright who's known especially on television for writing four episodes of a TV series called Torchwood.
Mm.
And very interesting when you think about it that way. She comes to this from Torchwood. So she is going to tell stories about what it's like to be impossibly long-lived.
I like that layer. So,
isn't that something? Yeah.
It has a Torchwood feel to it now that you mention that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Doesn't it?
Mm. You know, I remember telling you, Clarence, that this particular episode was, in my opinion, not as good as the first one. And I have a question I'm going to ask you guys a little bit later on that maybe will answer why I think that it's not quite as good. But other than two characters that were in the previous, or all three characters in some fashion that were in the last one are in this one, and the titles are similar to each other, The Girl Who Died, The Woman Who Lived, this isn't a continuation like you were saying, you guys were saying. It could have been inserted anywhere post the last episode, and it would have made sense in, you know, with just a little bit more modification if it were Bill and it was Bill and the Doctor as opposed to Clara and the Doctor or whomever. I don't know. There's things I really like about this, but there's something that I really, really don't like. And I think it ruins the episode for me. So I'm curious as we get into it to what you guys think.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the cold open. And Lee, I'll point this to you. Do you know or remember if you knew this was a Shielder robbing the coach at the beginning, or was it an assumed that it was her?
Because like Clarence, I'd completely forgotten about this episode. So everything about it was a surprise. But because I knew this was the second part of the story, very quickly in the highway robbery, I said, "Wow, that's a Shielder, who's got a voice changing kerchief, apparently."
Yeah.
Over Hanoi. Because, you know, having anybody wearing a mask invites you to try to squint and figure out who they are. So I was going, "That's Maisie Williams." So yeah, look at those eyebrows. That's me. So, but boy, I love this. I love this cold open. This teaser is just, you know, there's nothing more exciting if you're going to set a story in 1651, highway robbery. I mean, yeah, stand and deliver. It's great stuff. If you know the history, I mean, this was a real problem and people dealt with it all the time. And you're really helpless to do anything about it. You just give it up. And this poor woman in there, she knows that sometimes this is going to end maybe more badly for her than for the men on board. And although she, the way they're playing it is she's like, boy, I hope this is going to turn into a fit of passion.
Yeah.
So she's interesting. And so she's buying that the robber is a man. And I always love when the doctor has concocted some kind of a machine made out of, you know, spare parts or whatever. And he comes into the story oblivious to what else is going on because he's looking for the amulet. And I just think that's a lot of fun. It's him being Spectrum-y again, him sort of apparently not completely involved with what's happening in the real world. To the extent that the coach ends up driving away with, and leaving the doctor in the nightmare out there.
Cool name, by the way.
Yeah, and you know, it's not until you see it in print that you see that she's spelling it with a K.
Mm-hmm.
She's the nightmare. I'm always fascinated by a pun that's in a spoken language, you know, media, a joke that doesn't make any sense unless you see it written. Anyway, and there's a lot of them out there, but the nightmare. Right.
Clarence, what about you? What did you think of the opening?
I thought it was fantastic. Of course, I kind of gathered pretty quickly that it was Maisie Williams or me behind the mask there. I agree with you, Lee, about the fact that the woman was like, oh, what else do I have to give? Wink, mm-hmm. wink.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of the episode. But yeah, it was good fun. And then you have the doctor, as you mentioned, on the Spectrum, kind of being oblivious to the whole thing and has a one-track mind on, I'm here to find this artifact, and that's, you know, I'm not worried about much else. Points where he's into giving or acknowledging the robbery going on, then turning right back around and saying, oh, what are we doing here? We're still in a robbery? You know, that type of thing. So he was all over the place. And of course, if you're the guy with the gun, you're going to be somewhat confused. But who we had with the gun, you know, actually me behind a mask, I never would have. This was kind of a big leap for me. Of course, they're going to explain throughout the episode all the time passed. But she was such a different character in the previous episode. And we're seeing the result of hard years and a rough time that she's had so far. So just seeing her in this totally different role kind of threw me for a loop because I was like, what? What's going on? Which I mm-hmm. guess was meant to be, you know, that's the impression they wanted you to have. So, yeah.
All right. Let me say before I read or tell you what I think, I want to bring in a comment Wingrace made. It says the whole origin of the riding shotgun. Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense, right?
Yep.
Somebody that riding is literally that is shotgun.
That is indeed where the phrase comes from. Yeah. Armed against bandits. Yeah.
So as for me, for the opening, I thought it was good. I had great energy. You know, Peter Capaldi having fun. I thought it was, you know, well done. The mask with the I'm talking so much darker, that was kind of, you know, like, do I really accept that? Because she actually says I've had a lot of time to practice the voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so. Practice. So I get, you know, 800 years, which one of the comments that she said is one of the things that stuck with me ever since I've seen this, where she's talking about if you do this, what is it, 1,000 hours, you're something, 10,000 hours, you're something. And she was saying how many years she's done it. So that has stuck with me ever since seeing this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But even though I really, really enjoyed that, Clarence, I want to revisit what you said a minute ago, talking about how she had changed. So I'll point this question to you. It's been 800 years since the doctor saved her. In your opinion, tell me about how you think she has changed, coped, or dealt with living history.
Not very well. she felt like she was so sweet in that the previous episode. And just right out the gate, she has a gun to people's heads, you know, threatening to steal all their belongings. And we find out she's been doing it for a long time. Not only that, if you go back to they get into it later, but her diaries, and we see that she's been through all these things, the plague. And of course, all those things are going to harden you. It's going to make you a different person. So I guess it's understandable, but still, I think maybe because this episode was so close to the previous one, timey-wimey. But that's why I kind of threw me for a loop just starting off there.
Okay. What about you, Lee?
Watching it this time, I guess, especially since I didn't remember it, I was really touched by her account of herself. It sounded like she has been trying to do good with her longevity and her effective immortality, that she's been teaching herself to do things that are really helpful and useful. But they don't tend to go right. It keeps blowing up in her face that she cures a whole village and she gets branded as a witch. And I like the fact that we had a quick point of view of her being in the dunking chair because we'll see that again.
Yes.
Later episode, the witch dunking. Imagine if that happened to the doctor.
Indeed.
Yeah. But it is the losing her children to the Black Death that apparently is the breaking. That's the point at which she said, I'm through. I'm not going to, feeling hurts too much. So I'm just not going to feel anymore. And now she's out being a highwayman. And she says later, just for the kicks. She doesn't need the money. Mm-hmm. She's just doing it so she feels something. And, you know, that's a dangerous way to live. It's a dangerous way to live.
And, you know, on top of that, you're going through this that we often see in vampire stories where you are in sometimes playing your descendants, or you have to explain your death, or you're coming back and the person is old and thinking you're a ghost because you're still young. That in itself was sad.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys this, and this was an interesting point to me that they brought up, which it is basically about the mind. The human mind cannot process the amount of memory, so she forgets. So her long-term memory, because her mind is not, quote-unquote, built to have such a long memory, forgets. Thoughts on the forgettingness, if that's even a word.
For these
purposes, it is now.
Absolutely. I wondered about the business, just watching this fresh today, but she does not remember Ishilda. And I thought, has she had a blow to the head? What has happened since we saw her last? And I guess we're meant to understand that she literally doesn't remember that. 800 years is a long time.
Mm. Clarence? What about you? What'd you think?
Well, you finished, Lee?
I'm sorry.
I appreciated that detail because it's a detail we see come up again in a different form with Donna being able to store all this knowledge of the doctor in her brain before it drives her crazy.
Good point.
And thinking about our own lives, there's things that just fall off the ledge as we get a little bit older, put something else on the ledge, something else gets shoved off. And if somebody reminds you, like the doctor did at this point, it comes back to, oh, yeah, I kind of, you know, just don't even think about that anymore, you know, that type of thing. So I appreciate that detail. I don't know if I've seen many shows where it's a long-lived person for some reason or another that didn't display or that did display a loss of memory. So it was a cool detail to have here. And I appreciated it because maybe completely forgetting your former self was a bit extreme, but it makes a lot of sense. You're living all these different lives she's lived throughout these 800 years. I can see some of that falling to the wayside, you know.
You know, and a talking point or, you know, a point of view or whatever, a story point that Moffat put in there was referencing that one of the reasons she has the diaries so that she herself can go back and read about herself and read and refresh her memory of ABC and 1, 2, 3 and things that had come before. So I thought that was really good.
Clarence, and then we discover that she's editing her memories as well.
Yes. Yes. So, Clarence, I want to point this one to you. She, at one point, when talking about being saved by the doctor, tells the doctor, "You didn't save my life. You trapped me inside it." Thoughts? "You didn't save my life. You trapped me inside it."
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go here with this, but this is what I think of when I hear you say that. It's people who've decided to purposely maybe, you know, end their life, but something happens and they prevent it from, and they feel trapped in that way. So maybe not necessarily for her in this instance, but knowing that, like, when the alien comes down and probes the person and puts them back on Earth and walks away, and flies away, she's been exposed to a massively greater world than the world, this Viking village that she's trapped in. And she even makes the point at some point in the episode of saying that she's a day away from this, some village, you know, it takes forever to get there. So she's definitely someone who has seen something out there that's greater, but she can't access that, probably mostly because of the time that she's in. So I think that's part of it. But yeah, some people look at living forever as a curse and not a gift. So that, and added to the fact that she knows something is greater, is out there in the stars, I can definitely see why she would feel trapped.
Mm. Lee, what do you think?
I'm thinking about Star Trek. that we, one of the things that we heard from Q repeatedly on the franchise shows that he was on was that immortality consists largely of boredom. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's messing with people, because it's diverting. And I remembered, you reminded me also of the original series episode, which, you know, spoilers for something from nearly 60 years ago, but they meet a man who turns out to have lived on Earth and inexplicably become immortal. And so he has lived for thousands of years at that point. And yeah, he remembers all the people that he was, including Leonardo and Brahms and, and a number of other people that we'd know. So I never thought about it before, but that is maybe as unlikely as him having this fantastically long lifespan, is that he's somehow retained all of that. I think this actually makes more sense, that she knows she's better write stuff down. And so she's got handsome leather volumes of them.
Oh, really? Perfect.
Yes. She has gorgeous penmanship. But, you know, if you have 800 years just to practice.
10, yes, indeed, hours, man. Yeah, 10,000
right.
hours.
It's interesting to look at her first books, and they'd all be in, like, runes and so on. That
would, oh, that would be funny.
Ones. But they established that it's 1651. And she says it's been 800 years, so that means that the previous episode took place in the mid-800s, which sounds about right. So I just appreciated the fact that this screenwriter cares enough to get the local history.
You know, Clarence, when I was hearing you talk about your response to that, you saved my life, or you didn't save my life, you trapped me inside it, only thing I could think of is, my goodness, that sounds like what he does to every freaking companion that he meets.
Well, she says so. She guesses so. She doesn't really have that much of his history to call on, but she speculates, and we know she's right.
Mm-hmm.
We got that from school reunion, and we've heard it from, you know, from others along the way.
You just, most recently from Tegan.
From Tegan, yeah. You just go on, and, you know, do you even think about us?
Mm. So, Lee, I'm going to point this one to you. Why do you think the doctor was so adamant about not taking me with him?
Well, to me, that's the most interesting thing about the episode, is that once he realizes that he may have sort of created a monster, I mean, he saved her life, you know, thank you, she says, but you did trap me inside my life. Her life is going on inexplicably long, and that he knows that that is a blessing and a curse. And the way he has said over and over again, the way he keeps himself from turning into a monster, is to always have somebody to keep him in balance. And traveling with somebody who's got the same curse he does, he knows that will not work. And, you know, he must have thought about it before, right?
Right.
I mean, it's why he doesn't travel with Captain Jack. You know, I don't know. Is it something that came up when he was traveling with Romana? You know, is that an idea that was in his head way back then? Or, you know, who knows how long she'll keep regenerating? And I don't know. Maybe this has just occurred to me in this moment. He may have a pet theory that this is what happened to the master, is that he's been traveling by himself.
Good point.
And this is what happens.
You know, I'm totally going to go off on a tangent here, but if we ever introduce a character named Fred, then I'm going to go say at that point that is a male incarnation of Romana. That's named Fred.
And she's
just saying it.
She would choose that name. They would choose that name to get the doctor's attention.
All right. So one more question really quick on immortality before we move on. Hmm. We've made reference to, and we hear a reference to Captain Jack at the end of this story. My question, and Clarence, I'll point this to you. Captain Jack, how then does he cope? Because he doesn't seem to have any memory issues.
Captain Jack is, I don't know. I think just the makeup of the character, he's so happy-go-lucky in a sense. And I don't know, the memory thing. Okay. We don't have no explanation for that, but him as the years taking a toll on him, I just think his personality just does not lead to that. Although we see some scenes where he does reference that, you know, the pain of living as long as he's lived. I particularly felt that pain when in the Torchwood episode, when he got, what was he sent back and buried? I can't remember what happened exactly, but he had to live out the span of time to reach the point of Torchwood again.
That's right.
Yeah. So he's definitely had to deal with similar issues. And as far as, you know, the doctor not letting me travel with him, that felt a little weird to me. I mean, the fact that he let Jack do it. And then if you go a little forward, he lets Missy travel with him. And if you count the cart, no, that was a robot master. Don't count that. But yeah, so yeah. I don't really get why he's so adamant about not allowing her to come along. But maybe just sees, like you said, Lee, he may just see what he's created in this episode as an opportunity to try to correct that.
Yeah. Really quick before we move on, Wingrace said that regarding Captain Jack, he believes buried alive for 100 years or something like that.
It makes me want to go back and see those because I'm poorly remembering something else that relates to this is that in one of the very last of the Torchwood movies, you know, the specials, doesn't Jack meet a young woman that he's very strongly drawn to and they just seem like they have a lot in common? And, you know, he's going to hit on her in that way that he does. And then she says something that makes it clear she's his granddaughter.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
if I'm remembering that right, you know.
Oh, boy.
But they appear to be the same age, of course. And, it's just another punch in the gut for him. It's like, this is what happened. And I think he just doesn't keep track. I think he's probably lost a lot of his memories over this time, and he's just not bothered by it.
Yeah.
That's right. But I don't know.
Or if it's is it just Captain Jack and the poker face is Captain Jack?
Well, true.
You know,
that's a great face. You know, if he just ended up as nothing but a face, that would
I
be,
know.
You know.
Yeah. They could just put him in a tank and just let him be
fine.
There. Yeah.
And let me add, there's something else about taking the long way around. She takes the long way around and a doctor just pops up as if their experience they had together happened yesterday. So that has to weigh a lot on you when you know this guy's hopping around in a you know, spaceship through space and time. And you've gone the long way around.
And when you finally do catch up with him, he's not there for you. This is strictly by coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch, she really thought he was coming for her. Yeah. Yeah. The last line of the teaser is, "What took you so long, old man?"
Yeah. So let's go in another direction. And I'm curious, really, really curious as to what you guys think of the character of Leandro, the fierce lion alien. Lee, I see you shaking your head, so I'm going to point it to you first. Leandro, what thoughts have ye?
As a world traveler, I've explored what people would be comfortable calling me in other languages. And in a lot of places in Europe, I'm Leandro. So I dug that, of course. It's funny that when I saw the eyes flashing in the darkness there, I almost, you know, smote the old forehead. I'm like, oh, of course. Doctor Who stories always have to have an alien besides him, right? I mean, no matter where we are, no matter what's going on, there's something inexplicable happening. And that's storyline A. And storyline B is about invaders from another planet. And this is a Doctor Who meme that I feel sometimes has just kind of worn out its welcome. It's just not, oh, really? Do we have to have that? Vincent and the Doctor, I think that story would stand perfectly well without the creature from another planet. Probably. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But it's just like, you can almost forget the rest of the story is so interesting. And then something else happens. You go, oh, that's right. We have to have, there's got to be some kind of a critter down in the basement or something. And it's going to turn out they're from another planet. And they are here to take over the world. As per usual. So, you know, I kind of, when she spoke to the lights in the darkness, I'm like, yeah, okay. Whatever. but the final showdown with Leandro is, it makes it all worthwhile, you're asking me. So, there you go. Those are my thoughts about Leandro.
Clarence, your thoughts?
He was a villain. We needed a villain. He actually reminded me, I don't know if you remember that, was it 80s or 90s Beauty and the Beast show?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He reminded me of the Beast from that. So
yeah, Ron Perlman. Yeah,
so I mean, I wasn't particularly, you know, fond of him or anything. I wasn't like, oh, wow, this dude's amazing. He was just there, like Lee said, there because he needed to be there. I did find kind of the whole portal opening via amulet was kind of interesting. Of course, he was just using me the whole time, and the doctor tried to tell her, but she wasn't listening to him. So that was kind of interesting, and, you know, he got his comeuppance by the end of the episode. I don't know.
All right. So I'm going to point part two of this question to you first, Clarence. Sam Swift, what did you think of that character?
Okay, help me out here. Is that supposed to be some historical character that I should know about, or is that merely a thing for Doctor Who?
Not that I'm aware of. He's just sort of rival highwayman.
In that case, no. I thought he was hilarious. I love like when him and the Doctor had the showdown of comedic wits when he was about to be hanged. So I thought that was pretty interesting. The guy was very quippy. So I thought he was fun addition to the cast. So I really enjoyed him in this episode. I don't really know about, you know, will we see him again? Help me out here. Cause he does get the little chip that makes you live forever. The Doctor tries to explain it off, but ultimately he says he doesn't know how it will affect him. But I did find him to be a fun, lighthearted character that this episode needed. And, you know, seeing the Doctor and him go toe-to-toe was probably, you know, some of the best parts of that one.
Awesome.
After the Doctor had said no puns, and then they have to do a pun battle just to stall for time.
All right, Lee, what say you?
I kind of came away with the same question. I thought, you know, I'd actually really like to see him again. And now that's possible, that'll be great. Wait a minute. Did we see him again? So I don't know. But it's just, he's kind of like the Doctor's daughter, right? We have this sort of C-string list of characters out there who are, we know are still out there and could turn up at any moment. So.
So this is what I love about doing this podcast, because I love when we find something where we don't agree. And I love that because Sam irritated the out of me. Yeah. I thought the actor did a great job in the role. Slight to the actor in any shape, form, or fashion. But the character of Leandro for the purposes of the Monster of the Week and for Sam just being comedy when I don't really think comedy, in my opinion, was needed, both just irritated me. And is why I don't like this episode that much.
Sam lives for the moment because he knows the next is not promised.
And again, I love
that's a story point.
The idea. I love, you know, and I love his, I love his spark and his fun, but just not for this episode. And I want to mention a comment that Wingrace has, title for a follow-up, The Swift and the Dead.
That's really
love
good.
Love it.
That's Love really it. Good. Yeah. No, he's supposed to be the burr under your blanket. That's, you know, that's the kind of character that is. He's supposed to be annoyed. And, you know, and I think that they committed to that and made that a lot of fun. Yeah, I wouldn't want him to be a companion for the Doctor or anything.
No.
But it would be interesting to see him turn up, you know, sometime in the future.
All right, so we know my opinion to this question, but I want to get to the two of you. would it have been better to have this entire episode be something like a day in the life with me and having a back and forth conversation strictly between the doctor and me, as opposed to having this sub, you know, conversation, this subplot going on? Thoughts?
Well, that's part of why I rolled my eyes when we saw our first glimpse of Leandro, is that I sort of thought, you know, this story is holding up really well with this, to me anyway, with this discussion about what it means, what the cost is of being immortal or being impossibly long-lived. That maybe Time Lords can do it, maybe they can't. But if we can't do it as Time Lords, I guarantee you, he's saying you can't. And you're going to have to trust me on this. I'm older than you, he says at one point. How old are you anyway? I'm older than you. I just think that's the most interesting and the most important part of the episode. And you know, it points us towards this ending that obviously we'll talk about what a thrill it is for human beings to be aware that they're alive and what an extraordinary gift that is because it's so brief.
Mm-hmm. All right, Clarence, what say you?
I agree that maybe they could have flushed out the Dr. Me parts a little bit more to take a deeper dive and explore that a little bit more. I will say I do like the points that, you know, added some lightheartedness to the conversation, because, you know, I feel like we almost couldn't just have that just because it was so heavy what they were talking about. And we're seeing the flashbacks and the kids dying and let's balance this out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's very true.
But, you know, I could see Clara coming in at the end, you know, as she did, but I think Doctor Who could take a chance and have an episode with just two characters in it. I mean, you know, that might would work. You know, I don't know about just having an episode with one character. I don't know if they would ever try something like that.
I don't know. That would,
you know, but who knows? Who knows? But let's move on real quick to the closing scene. And we see this back and forth between me and the doctor. And my question, and Clarence, I think I'm going to point this to you first. Do you think the doctor regrets, as of this episode, saving me?
No. I think whatever reservations he had, by the time we get to the end of this episode, he sees that she's not nightmaring. that maybe she's changed just a little bit, and maybe she's going to be a little bit more altruistic going forward. So, at the beginning of the episode, yes, I think he probably regretted it, definitely. But by the end of this adventure, I think he kind of mellowed out and was like, okay, you're going to, she even said it, I'm going to go out here and do good in the world. You know, I'm going to be a protector of Earth, I think is what she said. So yeah, she's a totally different person by the end of it. And, you know, he has confidence in her.
All right. Lee, what do you think?
Oh, I believe him because he says, I'm glad I saved you. You know, and when earlier it was clear that he was having second thoughts, you know, but with that last little scene they have together, he says, I'm glad.
Okay. So he's glad that he saved her. So then we see Clara return at the end and we have that cliffhanger where she's basically stalking Clara is what it looks like.
Well, she said she was going to be watching over the companions is what she said.
That's true.
Yeah. It's guardian angel.
But was she that to me? I mean, at least in that picture, the way they had it framed, she didn't look as altruistic as that sounds.
Are you using future knowledge here, sir, to frame your opinion?
No, I really am not. I'm just going strictly by that particular picture because it looked like I know something you don't know. That's kind of that.
Which, to be fair, she does. But
true.
But yeah, it did. It was an odd face to be making if she's going to be her guardian angel. Yeah. And I guess I haven't known a lot of people who are full on stalkers, but I can imagine that part of their rationale is, no, I'm looking after them. I'm taking care of them. You know, they needed somebody to look after them.
All right. So before we get toward into our favorites, Lee, any other items that you wanted to bring up that we have not covered yet?
Well, the doctor is reminded when he sees the amethyst or the amulet, I mean, of the Eye of Hades, king of the underworld, who in later Greek mythology would be called Pluto. Just mention that and say no. It occurred to me that there are two lovely bookends here, and I know this has got to be deliberate. Think about it, as a two-parter, these two-parters basically begin and end with a giant hole opening in the clouds and something completely yes. bizarre coming through, right? So yeah. I like that as bookend. Also love the fact the doctor tells me, is this breaking the laws of time travel or something? But he warns her about the Great Fire of London and even tells her that it's actually started by pterileptals.
Yeah, which, I love that. Touch.
Which we know from Visitation back in 1982. But yeah, that's okay, isn't it? To make sure that she's not in London in 1660, whatever.
Yeah. So now you say that it was the amulet that Pluto was looking for. You're saying, is that what you?
No, that he said it reminds him of the eyes of Hades, king of the underworld. And that later suggests to him that they think it will take you to an afterlife, another life, another reality. And that is indeed what it's for. So
I was just saying, if that were true, then the amulet could be like a treat or something that Pluto yes. wanted. Who knows?
Mike and Ikes.
Yes. All right, Clarence, what about you?
Was it just me at the castle at the end of this episode and the castle in the previous Viking episode looked the same? I need to go back and compare, but I'm like, it looks like the same set.
That's possible, you know.
Yeah, but that's the only thing I have.
Just save a buck somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah,
the budget.
Well, I was talking last week about the Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That's one of the most ingenious uses of an interior ever, because we go to a lot of castles, apparently, in that movie, and it's all the same castle. Filmed from different angles and with different set dressing, but yeah, you can go visit the castle and they'll point it out to you. And they should film this scene over here. And just turn 180 degrees, and they film this over here, and you recognize it.
Great storytelling. You can take anything and tell a good story.
Exactly. It's all magic.
Yes. Well, you know what is magic or isn't magic is our favorite quote. So favorite quote, Clarence, I'm going to start with you. Favorite quote.
Okay. The doctor and the Shielder are talking about Clara, excuse me. And the Shielder says, she'll down you, you know. She'll blow away like smoke, the doctor says. Save your breath. Ashilda, how old are you, doctor? Older than you. How many have you lost? How many Claras?
Double meaning.
Yeah, that's right. But boy, I love Peter Capaldi's response to that, just the way he plays that moment. That burns. That goes down and burns. That's...
All right. Favorite quote, Lee Shackelford.
I love that this episode ends with their frank discussion about the fact that human beings have got this living thing figured out just because our lifespans are so short. Yeah. And when we figure that out and embrace it, we're the ones having a good time. And the way he sums it up is he says, these mayflies, they know more than we do.
Very good. Yeah. All right. So for me, I just latched on to this simply because of her chosen name and the double meaning of this. From now on, it's me against the world. I just thought that was awesome. awesome. All right. So favorite scene, Lee, I'm going to switch over to you. Favorite scene.
I love a good stage combat. I love a good fight on screen. And sometimes you don't believe them. And sometimes you just don't buy the stakes. But that little tussle with the doctor, Lady Me, and Sam Swift and his men, that's one of the best stage fights I've ever seen in a TV show. It's not clear how this is going to go. It's, you know, hey, don't mess with him. Oh, don't mess with her. Oh, okay. Don't mess with me. You know, that's you can follow it. It's clear what's happening. And, I didn't expect that to happen. And then another reverse. Wow. And it just goes lightning. It's really, really great. Great direction there and great performances from all those.
Awesome. All right. Clarence, favorite scene.
Yeah, and I'll add that the writing in that scene Lee talked about, the banter back and forth was really good as well. So the writing in this episode was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And My favorite is going to be the one I mentioned before when they were on the stagecoach and the woman in the stagecoach was like, what else do I have to give? that was smart.
All right. So my favorite scene is the one we've just been talking about with our favorite quotes or some of, which is the ending with her and the doctor. Mainly it's my favorite because she stands her ground and the doctor, as we know, loves to be in control and just assumes that they're going to be in control. And I love how she stood her ground and was just toe to toe with the doctor. So that was my favorite scene. So final rating, Clarence, I'm going to start with you. Final rating.
I'm going to give this 4 masked bandits out of 5.
Oh, okay. Lee, what say ye?
I'd written a rude version of this, but I think I'm going to go for the G-rated one instead. I'm just, I can't do it. I'm going to give it 4 holes in the clouds.
Out of 5.
That was the Jeeves.
All right. So I'm going to give it, I can't go that high because there are still parts that irritated me. I'm going to give it, thank you. And now you just put it down another 0.25. I'm going to give it 3.5. It made us think of Pluto's out of 5. That was a treat.
Oz9 reference, folks.
OZ-9.com. All right, gentlemen. I want to say thank you very much, and thank you for everyone in the chat. Thank you for joining us. As Clarence said at the beginning, be sure to subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. We also are now on YouTube. Our podcast feed is now on YouTube for Doctor Who or Discussing Who. And also you can find us on Apple Podcast. So for everyone listening, again, thank you for joining us. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.